and what we can learn from them.
So I will try to go from nil order to quantum disorder, and in fact we had already heard a lot about the phase diagram that was written. Focus. And so we have already learned that and a lot about the quantum phase diagram, first written by Chakraverty, Halperin, and Nelson, and saying that for the nonlinear quantum sigma model for small coupling parameter is in a Néel long range order phase. Whereas, if you increase the coupling parameter, you might find something which is usually called a quantum disordered phase. But I think that nonlinear quantum sigma model is not able to give us information about this phase. And what we have been trying to do is to find a way to go from Néel long range order to quantum disordered, to the quantum disordered phase for spin 1/2. And I have heard that it is impossible. I hope to be able to prove to you that we have at least two scenarios that that goes from Néel long range order to quantum disordered phase. And our interest was to try to do some kind of, let us say, zoology with on this quantum disordered phase, because up to now, I think we do not know a lot on magnetic two-dimensional quantum disordered phase. So we try to use the exact diagonalization in order to extract some features. Some features for the properties of the first low excitation, low temperature excitation. So that's the focus of what we have done. And during this seminar, I will just comment the first and the third point. I have no time to go through all this material. I will just comment the first thing, that is, with exact diagonalization, we are able, we think, really to see the mechanism of spontaneous symmetry breaking, which appears in quantum antiferromagnet. And I will show how it appears and discuss if I have sometimes order by disorder in this picture. And then I will shift to this last point with the most interesting and probably fascinating spin liquid system that we have found, that is the Heisenberg model on the Kagome lattice. It is indeed for going from that point, the Néel long range order, to the quantum disordered system, we choose to concentrate on triangular lattices. And when we begin that studies at the beginning of the 90s, it was not clear if on the triangular lattice spin 1/2 antiferromagnet was in Néel ordered. So we begin by studying the spin 1/2 antiferromagnet on the triangular lattice, and after that try to change something either in the lattice or in the coupling in order to find quantum disordered phase. We finally found two ways to do that: either depleting the triangular lattice to go to Kagome, or adding special terms to the Heisenberg magnet, which are four cyclic, four spin exchange terms, none that is quartic term in the spin. And so, when adding quartic term in the spin, we arrive at something which is rather, I would say, standard, as it corresponds to what we expected, but when we depleted the lattice, it was quite different. And so, why do we begin such a study? First of all, there has been much intellectual interest in these quantum disordered phases that were described as resonating valence bond states. But resonating valence bond state is a, let us say, a fuzzy concept. And see, in a simplest way, it is usually and produce like that, you just...
Excuse me, that was me.
So there is no problem. If there is no problem of balance, that's okay. In fact, for Anderson, the first motivation was experimental. There was a system in which magnetism was not understood when he looked at it in 1973. And after that, we have had a lot of other oxide and Edam III solid in which magnetism appears to be a bit specific. And so that there is some experimental motivation to look at quantum disordered system. But the theoretical motivation can first be put in very simple terms. If you look at semi-classical physics and if you look to spin, you say you have the Hamiltonian, the coupling Hamiltonian is 2SiFJ. The maximum value for this coupling is -1/2 in a semi-classical physics. It is -3/2 in quantum physics. And usually it is said that quantum fluctuations stabilize the system. And so that's a completely different picture. In one picture you say, I know that the spin has a given direction. In the other one, you say, my two spins are in a state with total spin s equals zero. And when I put two spins in the total spin s equals zero, I will say it's a valence bond state. Perhaps I will say also it is a dynamo state. So remember that when I say a dynamo state, I have in mind this kind of thing. This quantum superposition. And from these two pictures, if you go to triangular lattices, you have these two possibilities of ground state. If I take the semi-classical physics picture and take a triangular lattice and try to minimize Heisenberg Hamiltonian on the triangular lattice, if I take first a triangular plaquette, Heisenberg Hamiltonian is just the total spin up to a constant, it is the square of the total spin. In order to minimize the square of the total spin, I have to put the spin equals zero, that is the three spin on the three sublattices at 120 degrees, equal at 120. That's the Neal order, semi-classical picture. If I come from the quantum physics way, and I try to figure out what could be for an infinite lattice a ground state, I would say I just tie the lattice with dimer, and I have, for example, a variational wave function that way. In fact, if I take only one variational wave function, I will have a valence bond configuration which is not a ground state, an eigenstate. And I know that I might build something which probably has a better variational energy by adding all the configuration with short-range dimer. That is the first picture of what is a short-range dimer valence bond system. But it's just a picture, and in fact it cannot be an eigenstate. In any situation where you have an Heisenberg Hamiltonian, you necessarily have longer bond. And so the problem is to know what is the real size of the bond. Does the weight of the bond decrease exponentially with their length or not? We know it's the variational work of Leung, Dussault and co-workers that probably Neal order is described in the ground state by some kind, in the absolute ground state S equals total spin equals zero, by some kind of resonating valence bond state, but the bond have a weight which decreases like a power law of the length. In the quantum disordered state, it is suspected that the valence bond may be shorter, but it's just, let us say, common sense. There is no proof to now. So in the resonating valence bond state, what we know is that the ground state will be S equals zero. That's very simple. There will be no symmetry breaking of any kind. In a total spin S equals zero, you cannot construct any vectorial operator. There is no symmetry breaking, no way to point a given direction. And the last assumption was that in this system there is a gap, is that in system there is a gap to magnetic excitation. It is in that kind of sense that it is a strong coupling theory. A gap to magnetic excitation, and in very simple word, one can usually explain this gap by saying the first excitation, if your state is a resonating valence bond state, the first excitation that you are able to do is just to open a dimer, a singlet, and create a triplet excitation, locally or at short range, let us say. And by doing this, you need a finite amount of energy, so you will have a gap for the first excitation. So that might do some sense, but the problem is, even if I say that, I have not completely described what might be the low temperature physics of this system. And indeed, I will not resist to give you a quotation of Anderson in 1973. He said that he was not able to figure out what could be the excitation, the first excitation, and he proposed two possibilities. One possibility is that there is a gap for magnetic excitation, for triplet excitation, and this is the picture that has been essentially kept for this resonating valence bond state. But it also said that there might be low energy excitation, which might be purely singlet. He add that if it is a Bose state, perhaps we will come back to that point at the end. Yes, I don't know. I've not written this paper, but perhaps we may have some idea of what he could have in mind. I don't want to do what we say in France, exégèse, or something like that. But we might have some answer to a more precise question. I don't know how to do this statistic up to now. And so that is why we have been looking at that problem. Where do we choose to look at this problem? We choose to look at this on triangular based lattices for at least two important reasons. First of all, because of this what we call frustrating geometry, which is the fact that on triangular lattice the binding energy is a bit smaller than on a square lattice. But perhaps it's not essential indeed. Second reason, it's not essential also, but that on this geometry there is what people in computational physics call in the jargon a sun problem, off the diagonal matrix element have not a definite sign. And so, for example, in that kind of problem, you have not all the theorems that are true for bipartite lattice. That is Marshall theorem, that is the Lieb-Matisse property on the hierarchy of the low-lying level. And nevertheless, in spite of the fact that we have not these properties, the result of this theorem appears to be verified, but not demonstration is not valid indeed. But the most important reason why we look primarily to triangular-based lattice was because we have read this extension of the Heisenberg model, large N extension, and it appears, if I have understood it well, that depending on the geometry, the phase that appear in the quantum disordered limit were different in the two cases. That is, in the bipartite lattices, in square lattices, it appears that the gapped phase might be essentially columnar phase, that is the spin pile phase, something like that, whereas in the triangular geometry it's not the case. And in fact now, 10 years after, I think that there is more and more a point to say that for the square lattice case, for the Heisenberg Hamiltonian with next neighbor and nearest and largest and frustrating interaction, there is essentially, on the square lattice case, there is effectively probably dimer long range order. There is, you have done some contribution to that thing, and also the team in Sydney, and I think there is new numerical result from people in Trieste who go in the same direction. So
is it known for the square lattice whether there's a direct transition from the anti-paramagnet to the dimer phase?
Up to now, no.
numerically.
But numerically, yes, that's, yes, numerically. Numerically, there is some for J2 over J1 equal 1 over 4, I don't know, remember exactly. There is a gap phase, which is probably a columnar phase. That is a phase in which you have long range order in the dimers. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the triangular lattice, what was expected was a phase without breaking of any symmetry, without long range order. So that's the reason why we look at this problem. And we look at this problem by exact diagonalization because we were thinking that from the numerical point of view it was a more secure way to look at it. Because as this sign problem is such that I suspect that any quantum Monte Carlo calculation will be plagued at the end by this sign problem, which is essential and could not go to low enough temperature to be really decisive.
Do you get sign problems with spins? I thought there was a fermion.
In fact, it's in spins on triangular geometry, we have the same sign problems and with fermion. Yes. It's the absolute ground state is not the totally, it has a phase factor which are...
basically related to the Marshall sign?
Yes, it's basically related to that.
It's not valid.
It's not valid because you have not this property of definiteness of the matrix and... So, we do it by exact diagonalization. We are not the first because I think that in 2D, the first people who have been doing exact diagonalization come from the group of David Bett and collaborators. And there have been many groups looking at that. The only difference we have tried to do is try to not only know the absolute ground state of the Hamiltonian, but know as many as low-lying level as we could, and know all their quantum numbers. And in fact, we decide to be rather to put strong constraints when we begin this study. That is, we wanted all the quantum numbers. We wanted to be able to understand if there was some accidental degeneracy, to be able to point at them and to see from what was the reason. And so, we have been. I shouldn't say we have been doing that because I should say my collaborators have been doing that program, and the two people mostly involved in the building of the program are one senior physicist and one senior mathematician, Bernard Bernu and Laurent Pierre. And they have done a program in which they try to put all what they were knowing about the lattice, about the symmetry, and have been able to have total spectrum for size up to 21 spin, I think, spin 1/2, and a large number of low-lying level for size up to 27, and a few, that is 10 level at, or even less for n equals 36, which is the largest size that they have been able to do. And
what is the largest size of the matrix that was diagonalized exactly?
Oh, that's a question. Roughly, and
size
21 to full spectrum.
What is the largest size? Of symmetry we use there?
The symmetry of the space group. And so let us say it is the space group is D3C6. That means that usually we have of the order of a factor of 12. Let us say they use also spin flip. And it gives a reduction by a factor of 2. They use the fact that they put in, they store only one, the component of the wave function of one representation of each symmetry class. They compute the matrix by using the fact that for any vector in a symmetry class, they know exactly the phase factor. So they put it exactly. And so I think, and I've forgotten also, let us say, the translation representation would. That's at the best you have this kind of decrease of.
N choose 2. You want to
go N up to 36.
But certainly you use S V, right?
Yes, the basis is with SV, but the fact is that we project, in order that here it is only space group, but we project, and that is one point important, we project in each irreducible representation of SU2, we know the total spin of each eigenstate. And that was an important point. It does not decrease the size of the matrix because we use the SZ basis. But it gives us, first of all, it increases the convergence of the Langschutz procedure because it discriminates in the spectrum. The spectrum is not so dense, so the distance between different energies is smaller. And so the convergence is more rapid. And second, we have this information, and this is an important information to have. In fact, to know the total spin of each eigenstate.
So even when exact diagonalization is done, it's done through Langschutz?
Yeah, exact diagonalization.
So you have the full spectrum, you use Langschutz method?
Yes. Langschutz plus this kind of projection on SU2 irreducible representation. And essentially, but it is when I say Langschutz, I say I know that they have written a new program. They don't use Laurent Pierre has written a new program. He do not use. I don't know why the library, because there is in the library some programs.
We have the Czech guy who has written the sample code, and I'm using binary method 2 million to 2 million.
Really, it's fully.
It's bigger. Yes, it's a bigger. In
it's
that,
bigger
it
without symmetry, but not sure.
Yes, it's bigger even with symmetry. I think it's bigger even with symmetry. Let us. The only thing I know is that when they look at 36, they have only three vectors in the computer, in the memory of the computer. There is no place for more. And for small sizes, they store they tabulate. The Hamiltonian and store it for 36. It's no way to tabulate the Hamiltonian. It is computed each time. It has been written for the Cray 94-98 computer, and this program and we have used another program written in University Hanover. I've done some error in the spelling by Christian Waldman on a T3E, that is a parallel computer, and he has been running in this T3E program has been running in Orsay, and where there is 256 processors, and in Jülich where there is 512. And the work I would be describing on the Kagome lattice has been done essentially by two PhD students, Philippe Le Cheminant 3 years ago and Christian Waldman in the recent 2 years or more. And first work I will try to discuss because probably it will help you to be convinced that exact diagonalization might say something about symmetry breaking, and I will just discuss the problem of symmetry breaking in an L antiferromagnet and how you can look at it even by looking at so small a sample that a sample with, let us say, 9 spin, 12 spin or 36 spin. And usually we have the habit to say symmetry breaking is a property of the thermodynamic limit. It's quite sure, as we will see. But indeed, even for small sizes, you have some proof You have some precursors of the symmetry breaking, which are very, very important in that kind of case. And in order to understand what I will be showing to you, first of all, I have to remember that we have been looking only at Hamiltonian, which were a pseudo invariant, that is, the total spin grand S is a good quantum number. And we have this good quantum, it can be diagonalized simultaneously with the Hamiltonian, and for each eigenstate, we have the good quantum number, the total spin. And if I look only at one single eigenstate of S square, we cannot break the Esuto symmetry. That means you cannot, with the total, even you do not break Esuto symmetry, you are not able to say the magnetization of this sublattice exists in this given direction. Indeed. And what is necessary to break a symmetry, Esuto or the other symmetry, is to mix in the state state belonging to different irreducible representation. I will just explain it on a very simple example, a one-dimensional example. Suppose that my Hamiltonian is an invariant by in the inversion, that is, it's an even Hamiltonian in the x variable. The eigenstates are either even or odd. Here is the ground state, it is even. Here are the first excited state, it is odd. But in each of these cases, the density of probability indeed is even. And so if you have only the blue state or the red one, you cannot break the symmetry. There is no difference between the left and the right. But if you mix odd and even symmetries, you arrive at a wave function which is breaking the symmetry. You see the density of probability favor here the positive x with respect to the negative x. And it is exactly that we mean. We want to see how we can mix different eigenstates in order to figure out what is exactly the null ground state. And perhaps I have 2 minutes to give. I read the paper, the biography by Nell, and he said that when he proposed his state in 1928 or 1930, I don't remember, he encountered a lot of opposition. In particular, Landau was very upset by his ground state, saying that your Hamiltonian is essentially a Esuto invariant, so you cannot be ground state of this system. And he moved to do a seminar in Leiden and in the Kamerling Honest Laboratory. And in this laboratory, Goethe, with Nungaut, was a young student, and Goethe just said, but it's impossible that what you are saying to us, it's certainly wrong. And I don't know, Neil did not say, he did not say in his biography what was his own answer, but the fact is that the fact that the Neil ground state, which breaks the SU2 symmetry, should be a superposition of a large number of eigenstates with different S is written, not very clearly, but it's already written in the paper by Anderson in 1952, just in the five last line of the paper.
The algebra doesn't believe in quantum mechanics. Yeah, that was one of the reasons why he wasn't bothered by it.
Yes. Yes, sure. And he was not believing quantum mechanics, and he was believing in experiment, and he was thinking that it was a good idea, a good model, and so don't care about it. And even we have heard that for many of the experiments that are still now discussed, you might not care about quantum mechanics. So now I just want, in order to explain what we have been thinking about this problem, I just want to move to another simple problem, textbook problem, which is if the problem of the symmetry breaking associated with solid state. First of all, let us take solid state. I take my piece of chalk and I say this piece of chalk is breaking translational symmetry. And indeed, if I look at the Hamiltonian, it's not breaking the translational symmetry. How does it do? How does this thing appear? And I will just give you very simple arguments. There has been more elaborated one indeed, but simple arguments are useful. And the first simple argument is to say, let us take seriously what we teach to our students. When we have a solid, something which is stiffness, we have a difference in, we have two kind of variables, dynamic variables, and we can separate the center of mass variables from the internal variables. And this separation in the energy gives you the center of mass and the energy of the center of mass and the energy of the internal variables, and we usually concentrate on the internal variables, the phonons. So that's good. And we might do that because, in fact, the kinetic energy of the center of mass is of not big importance. In that case, we are dealing with microscopic system, and the inertia of this microscopic system grows like the number of atoms in the solid, and so we have a very small term. And after that, usually we quantize that part, that is the internal excitation, and we find the phonon. But now I propose to discuss a bit in detail. Let us consider the vacuum of phonon. So we are left only with the center of mass. Put it and impose periodic boundary condition. If we impose periodic boundary conditions, the momentum of the center of mass will be quantized, and the energy of the center of mass, there will be eigenstate for this eigenstate will have different quantum momentum k, and this energy of the center of mass will go like that. So, if I show you, I display the total energy of the system versus the square of the momentum, this eigenstate associated to the center of mass will scale like that along a linear line, straight line, with the k vector, the smallest one, the smallest, the softest phonon, 2 pi over L, for a system with size L, and the largest one, 2 pi over A, if A is the distance between two next neighbor. And I plead that all these eigenstates are needed in order to localize the solid in the center of mass. Indeed, if you do a West packet with all these eigenstates which have different k vectors, you will be with Heisenberg inequality, you will succeed in obtaining your localization of the center of mass. And what is important in the following discussion is the fact that when the size of the system increases, the slope of this curve giving the total energy versus k squared decreases like 1 over n. Now, that's the semi-classical picture of the center of mass for the center description of the center of mass. Now I look to phonon, and I try to figure out what could be the first phonon. That is the phonon with the softest wave vector. For each of these levels, which are the quantum counterpart of the description of the center of mass, I should add. A quantum of k, that is 2 pi over L. And so I should have in my spectrum this eigenstate corresponding to the different k vector, and the difference in energy between, and this coming from my ground state, my semi-classical ground state, to the system with one soft phonon in it, I should have to add this energy. This energy, it's a linear in k, so this energy scales like 1 over L, that is like 1 over n to the power minus 1 over d. And I say that in a naive way, you have already in these two numbers the reason why you have at t equals 0 a solid in 2D and no solid in 1D, and we solid in 3D. When the dimension is larger than or equal to 2, all this level collapse to the ground state, all the red level collapse to the ground state faster than the blue, the black one. And so you have your wave packet which localize your system and which make it semi-classical. And after that, you might above it describe the phonon, and we do. And so that's the picture. I've never done this computation, but I think that if we do this computation, we should have that. Now we move to an L-ordered state. And I will do the same kind of reasoning. Null-ordered state, that is a state with Lagrange order, with stiffness. Now, the problem is, I will not the problem is no more to be discussed in translational space, but it is to be discussed in SO2, in rotational space, in spin space. And in spin space, it's the same. Each spin has its own degree of freedom, and after that, if I think that I have something which Lagrange order, I have to do a distinction between collective variables and internal one. Collective variables, to fix a spin, it's just the equivalent of the position of the center of mass in the previous problem. Here it is the Euler angle which fixes either the direction of the spin or the triedra if it is a complicated order, magnetic order. And the conjugate variable to this Euler angle are the total spin, is the total spin. And indeed, I expect that the kinetic is a free precession of this magnet. Goes like that. It's just inventory mechanics, I would say. It might be a bit more complicated, but essentially it's quadratic. And at the denominator, you have the inertia, which increases like m. And here, it's the coefficient of proportionality is indeed the spin susceptibility. And you have also the magnum, antiferromagnetic magnum, internal excitation. I do the same reasoning as before, and first of all, I concentrate on the state with zero magnum, and try to look how it could figure. I could see it in exact diagonalization. I will have the total energy, and now the total energy I displayed versus the eigen number of S squared, that is SS plus one. And so I expect to have eigenstates in a straight line in SS plus 1 with a slope going like 1 over n. That is my vacuum of magnum excitation. That is the homogeneous quantum counterpart of the Néel state. The Néel state is just, as we imagine it in semi-classical physics, it's just built as a wave packet involving these states. You do a wave packet, put the good phase factor, the good weight, and you can write it just a problem of elementary quantum mechanics, and you will have the semi-classical ground state. Here are the states corresponding to the semi-classical ground state, and above it, I should have the first one minor excitation, and so on.
What is the kinetic energy of the spin?
The kinetic energy of the spin is separated in two parts, I would say.
Yeah, but what is your mass?
Your mass, it is the inverse. In this kind of formula, you have the square of the conjugate variable of the position, and at the bottom you have the inertia. Inertia goes like, I might have put it like I, given.
Beyond Heisenberg-Hamiltonian, because Heisenberg-Hamiltonian doesn't have.
Yes, it has Heisenberg-Hamiltonian, or you take a Landau theory of magnetism, and you will have per spin an energy m e per spin equal m square over 2 chi. So if I read it again in terms of here it is the energy per it is a functional, it is a Landau Gainsbourg, it is a Landau functional for magnetism. And I claim that what I'm looking at is the same as that thing, in other terms. And you have the energy per spin equals the magnetization squared divided by 2 chi. If I go from this expression, which is an energy per spin, and introduce the total spin, magnetization will be equal to total spin divided, let us say, I take by something which is a multiple of n over 2. And so, I will have here, going from the energy per spin to the total energy, something which involves the square of the spin, divided by 2 chi n.
You want chi in the numerator, don't you?
Chi is, here it is a spin susceptibility.
That's the second derivative of the energy.
Yes, sure.
So it's
one of a chi, which is the same, it is this.
Chi is the second derivative of the energy.
Is that right?
Is it? It is the derivative of m.
Correct.
Chi is, but it is one of a chi, which is the second derivative of the energy. Yes. Yes. So, and in fact, you find it again, because when you write, let us say, the functional of the energy, you write it m2 over 2 chi minus mh, and you find it again, all the usual representation.
If this is heuristic this time.
I put it in a real heuristic way.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. No, I put it in a heuristic way at that time, but after that, when we will see that all the things fit in, we say we have identified what is this parameter. But at the beginning, it's just heuristic. It should be increasing like n. We should have something increasing like n. That's the only thing I'm saying here. And so, you have the same kind of reasoning. I will not go through. And if this reasoning appears to be true, there will be a small consequence, is that the ground state, what we call usually the nearly antiferromagnetic ground state, is built from not one eigenstate, one quantum eigenstate, but a number of eigenstates which goes like a power of n. That is, and the power is the number, essentially the number of sublattices. So there is, it's not an extensive entropy, but you may say that there is a logarithmic entropy in the ground state. So it's not extensive, it's not really important.
So it's an interesting thing to understand this, the energy is n squared divided by 2 pi. So that energy is actually come from magnetic dipole interaction between local magnets, which is excellent from the theory. So I don't understand what it's coming.
So let us put it. Let us put it the other way. First, accept it. We'll go on, and I will comment more detail.
I put
first. It's a total energy. I just say I have a system. It's just a reasoning. Let us say we take the second chapter of Lando mechanics, and we just do the reasoning. Without it, completely conceptual, and we say that there is isotropy of spin space, the total energy should be like that, you should have a term which is an inertia. After that, we will discuss the detail of what is going on.
You could just argue that if the system has a finite susceptibility at zero temperature, and if you just write the energy at the lowest energy state, that gives us total spin, it must have its form in order for the susceptibility to
yes.
finite
yes.
scale with length,
yes.
volume, and the pressure.
That's true. We may argue that. So that was what we expected, and here is the result. So it's not that I did not give you some more pedagogical result, but the color, it's a better transparency with the better color. So it's a bit more complicated than what I was discussing up to now, because it is triangular lattice and there is two coupling, G1 first neighbor and G2 second neighbor, but it does not change anything. Here you have 16 sides, only 16 sides, and you see this, I claim that it is the zero magnon ground state, and above it, in blue, this blue, the first magnon excitation. The color, the code of the color, corresponds to the K vector in the Brillouin zone. So here it is for the ground state, you have the K vector 0 and the middle, in that case, the middle of the Brillouin zone. That is the K vector, the wave function in for this K vector, the wave function when you go by a step, a translation step of one step, you take you pick a phase factor minus 1. So it's invariant by a translation by two steps. And here, this blue one are those stars which are near the point of the ground state. So indeed, there is not a lot of stars in that case, and that's why the spectrum is still a bit scarce. But nevertheless, we have already some information.
But you put 16 flights on a triangular lattice.
Yes.
Doesn't frustrate the antiferromagnetic order of the system?
If it was, that's the reason why I take this. If it was null order, yes, it would frustrate. In null order, on three sublattice null order, it would. But we have, when we have that kind of difficulty, we just twist the boundary condition. And by twisting the boundary condition, we succeed in finding the good. The good states. I might discuss it. It's a bit technical. In that case, it, as I put two coupling, in fact, the ground state is a bit more complicated. It is a four sublattice ground state. And I think, I see it, first of all, I think that there is five things to be seen on this transparency. The first is the slope of the Pisa Tower. It should decrease like 1 over n. I call it a Pisa Tower because usually, I think people think of a tower, and as I display it like that, it will collapse to the horizontal when n goes to infinity. So that's the reason why I call this tower of state Pisa Tower. And the slope of this Pisa Tower should decrease like 1 over n. I have one example of that kind of behavior. It is for the triangular lattice, simple Heisenberg Hamiltonian. It's not so. It's an older transparency. You have with this. This is the energy per spin for 9, 12, 21, 36. It's the first transparency that we have been doing on this system. At that time, we do not have all the spectrum for 21. The spectrum is complete for 9, it is complete for 12, there is only the low-lying level for 21, and only a very few, a very little number, very small number of eigen level for 36. Nevertheless, I have put a straight line here on the Pisa Tower, on the good level that I would like to look at it. And you see that the power of this Pisa Tower goes to zero when the size increases, and the inertia we discussed before, this parameter I put here I call it an inertia, it really increases like n, as we expected. So that's the first thing.
The second depends on s, inertia, in.
No, it depends on not. It does not depend on s. It is just here you have s plus one. It is the x axis. And here you have the inertia is just the slope. So SS plus 1, that is the S square that I put on the the numerator. And the slope gives you 1 over the inertia. 1 over the inertia. I put the inertia here, and I see that it increases versus n, and I see that it increases linearly. As I expected.
But can you explain why the dependence of the energy on total spin S is just a square and not some complex function of energy? How can you explain?
It's a free energy, and
it's an expansion of power of the vessel. That's probably higher order terms. Delta smallest.
But yeah. This is simply, you have your ground state, whatever it is, it's close to S equal 0, say, and then you, in order to produce an S equal 1 state out of an S equal 0 state, you have to split one spin.
Yep.
And then this split has neighboring interactions, and then this costs a certain amount of energy, which is not very much dependent on...
It goes to 0 when the sign goes
and
to infinity.
And then divide by n, and that's it.
I would not say that thing like that.
There's another way to see this, I think. S is an extensive quantity.
Yes.
It's total spin. Therefore, it scales like n.
No,
it
doesn't
scale like n.
No.
Why does it scale like n? In the ferromagnet, it will scale.
No.
This is a spin.
This is the energy of the lowest state of spin S.
Yes.
For S of order number of sites in the system. So if it didn't scale like S squared over n, then it would, the energy would not scale like the volume of the system.
That's right. So this is mandatory.
And there's certainly higher order terms, but they're going to have extra powers over n. I mean, from this, basically, the susceptibility as a function of field is determined by this expansion.
By this expansion at the beginning. But in fact, that there is certainly order term. The problem is that we do not see, in nail order system, we do not see the order term up to the large enough magnetization. I could do another, but and we see essentially this term. So.
Back to that picture, how does one know that the nature of the ground state doesn't change if you increase n?
When you increase n, well, the information that we have is that in all these levels, we first have the quantum number, the symmetry properties of this level with respect to the state group. And for example, here you see that you have five levels, here there is seven, nine, and so on. And how could you explain this level? First of all, this is a constant, it does not depend on n. It is very important that it does not depend on n. Second of all, it's very important to know what are the symmetries of this thing. What I say is that when I've seen that kind of thing, I recognize, because I've been doing spectroscopy in the past, that this level comes from, the tensorial product of four representation of spin n over 8. So you might be a bit complex. It might be a bit difficult for you, but let us suspect that I was looking not at this complex order, but I was looking at something much simpler on the square lattice. On the square lattice, what I claim is that the levels, I should have only one level here, for each value of s, and this level is very simple to understand. It comes from, if you have null order on the square sublattice, you have two different directions, you have two sublattices, two magnetization. Let us suspect that there is no quantum fluctuation. You have to combine a big n over 4 spin, which correspond to the lattice one, the A lattice, with the n over 4 spin, big spin, which correspond to the B lattice. You take these two spin and then do the combination. With two equal spin, you have one S equal 0 spin, one S equal 1, and so on. And this is the level that should appear here.
Yeah, but
then
assuming in any
space with
two sublattices.
That if it was a two sublattices. In that case, there is much, there is many more levels. And when you look at the number that appears, what I say is that it is the combination of 4 spin n over 8. And when you put 4 spin n over 8, you find, in the case where n equals 16, you find 5 levels here, you find 7 and so on here. So you have exactly the number of levels that you wanted, and it's exactly the physics that you might have. And
yeah, but that worked for 16. If you had 20, then
it works. It works. If you have something which frustrates your sublattice order, it will not work. But if it does not work, it always works. Mm-hmm. We have looked it up to 36. It always works.
Let me motivate my question a little in another direction. Suppose the system wanted to have an incommensurate spin structure. Then you wouldn't see the periodic boundary condition, or at least you would have to see some signal of it from the n dependence somehow.
Yes, you see, you would have some, probably, what I suspect is that the periodic boundary condition would pin the system, but what we have been
then
doing,
it could vary with n, because it would
vary, at that time it would vary with n, and we might have a way to look at it, because it would be to twist the boundary condition, what we have been doing. And if it was incommensurate, what we have been trying to look in some situation, when you twist the boundary condition, you might move your position of the minima, minimum, and you find eventually something, an uncommensurate wave vector. We have never seen, up to now, in the situation we have been looking at, uncommensurability. I suspect that might be the size perhaps that's too small, and there is always spinning. But in principle, it's not impossible to see it.
If you had it granted an incremental spin surface, you would have above this straight line its oscillation with the linear.
The fact is, if you frustrate, and if there is a nail order, and your boundary conditions are not compatible with the nail order, you do a spectrum, and you find something which is completely different. That is, the low-lying level are no more aligned as they are there. They are not the same symmetry. And when you go from size to size, everything is changing. So that's cautious. You must be cautious. You should look at something else. And in fact, when we began, we were looking at the three sublattice nail order, and we look at system like 16, and it was all the things were not going the right way, and once we tweak the boundary condition, all the things goes on the good way. So perhaps it's not necessary for me. So we count, when the things are stable with the size, you might count the number of level, and you figure out what the number of sublattices. After that, you look at the symmetries of these things, and you figure out what is the symmetry of your symmetry of the sublattices. In that precise case, it is a four sublattice order, and which is like that. There is four sublattice order A, B, D, C, D. And I see that because I see first of all, as I was saying, the wave vector of this point K equals 0 in the middle of the Brillouin zone. That means that it breaks, it is invariant by a transition of two steps. This is what I put here there. And after that, I look at the other quantum numbers, and it says to me that it breaks the symmetry with respect to this axis, which is the case, and does not break the symmetry by rotation by pi, and so that's it. And after that, you can do a real, you have done this hypothesis. After that, you take this hypothesis for granted. You do the group calculation in order to understand for each sublattice, each subspace, each S subspace, what is the number of your reducible representation which appears of this, and you do this, and it works. And if it does not work, there is something going wrong, but usually all things are going wrong before. And I think that there is, when you have the stability with the size, there is some idea that things are not going wrong, that you are in the good direction. And I've been speaking already a lot.
So this false sublattice structure, that's not a dimer state then?
No, no, that's not a dimer state. That is a nail-like state. And in fact, on this sublattice...
How are the things ordered on these false
sublattices? It is a false sublattice. There are false sublattices, and the sum of the false sublattice magnetization is zero. But in fact, that case, I took that case... because it was perhaps the more complex that we have been doing, and the best picture, as I said. But in fact, also on that case, at the thermodynamic limit, it's not the last answer. Because at the thermodynamic limit, when you go to 16 to 28, you see something going on, and there is selection of order by disorder. And because four sublattices... into a collinear state. And so you have, after that, no time. And it changed gradually. You see that from there is, uh, And you take this level. Here is the spectra, I show you. Total spectra for n equals 16. After that, I subtract this linear quantity, and in order to do a zoom, and here I have the low-lying level I have been discussing as the homogeneous phase. Here are the magnons, and it is always for 16 such. After that, I increase the zoom, and I just keep this level. Here they are there. And you see in that already I have distinguished in this level two families. The first, and I go with the same picture. I go from 16 to 28, and at 28 I really see that in these low-lying levels there is a change. There is level going upwards, and those which are stabilized, coming like line, and this I might figure out that they correspond exactly to the collinear order. So, the order by disorder, if the way I understand it, it's not really a good word. It's only the thing that when you have a competition between two orders, usually quantum, what we have been seeing, quantum situation does simplify the situation. You don't have, if in that situation you might have, in the classical point of view, either four sublattices or two sublattices.
Can you explain where this crossover occurred? 40?
Between 16 and 28, we
and
find.
Then one level comes down.
And this one series of level comes down, and the other one, or perhaps I should say that the other one comes up. Now, already for 16, those will disappear. The thermodynamic limits are already higher in the spectrum than the first one. And
do the other levels go above the magnons?
Or? Yes, they go above the magnons. And we have just checked it, not for all spin because it was complicated. We have checked it, let us say, I remember for S equals 0. And for 36, and it goes up the magnon. But here, in order to give for 36, you see it's difficult to show really because.
Is this why you need the J2? You wouldn't get this with
yes. J1. With J1, there is only three sublattice order, and it remains much simpler.
Do you know how the slope of your Pisa tower depends on J?
On J, that's the question to know if this, how with that kind of measurement we could measure the susceptibility, let us say the stiffness. We could do it, but we can do it. We have done it. I have some reference. The accuracy is not really good, I might say, and it is 5%. I would probably there is some uncertainty, it's 5% or 2% accuracy in the better case, and I think that this diagonalization, perhaps it's paradoxical, and I would say it's very necessary that when you do the diagonalization, you have all the numbers correct, but in fact. It's not, and we are not really interested in the second digit or the third digit because there is size effect, and perhaps I might conclude, this transparency, by this part of the talk by the discussion of this transparency, because in this discussion of this transparency, what is shown here, it is the order parameter versus 1/√n. It is what is expected, the good scaling law at large n. Why? Because when you have a finite size, let us say it rapidly, when you have a finite size, you have a cutoff, and you have an infrared cutoff, which is k, which goes like 1/L, that is 1/√n. The dispersion law for the magnon is linear in k. So when you do all the calculation, and it has been done, and it has been done by many people, Daniel Fisher and Herbert Neuberger and Zeeman in 1988, and the leading term is 1/√n. And so here as a result, the triangle, let us concentrate on the triangle. Here it is a result for the Heisenberg order on triangular lattice, that is a problem where you have three sublattices and in fact two different susceptibilities. So I will not discuss the two different susceptibilities, and I will not discuss the problem of twisted boundary conditions, so forget the square. Just concentrate on the triangles. You have the triangles here, the black triangles are the result of exact diagonalization. The open triangles are the result of spin wave calculation. You see that in the range of size we are able to look at, the order parameter has not still reached is 1 over square root of n asymptotic behavior. The size are really small. Second, it's not really smooth. So you understand that it is very difficult to extract, let us say, a spin velocity, a stiffness with a great accuracy from this measurement. I think that the qualitative conclusion is much more stronger than the number by themselves. The qualitative conclusion is that you go from this exact diagonalization in which you from this exact diagonalization you say there is four sublattice order, I see four great spin. And after that you move to the spin wave approximation, which rely on this idea that you have this large spin. And the data smooth regularly are in good continuity. So I think that is more important. And if you want, I might say that after that if you want to have this information that you ask me, let us say the susceptibility of stiffness, I would say in that situation, let us do a spin wave calculation. It's first order spin wave calculation.
Why would the spin wave be that quantitative? I mean, I don't necessarily see that this data suggests that.
But the problem, you might be the spin wave. You might do this a problem at infinite n.
No, you can. But why would that be quantitatively correct? I mean,
but you
have a 20%.
20% maybe, but you see the point are in either the case with periodic boundary condition or the case with twisted boundary condition, exact diagonalization will take into account all the fluctuation, and we do not put as a first assumption that there is magnetization. Exact diagonalization find macroscopic magnetization. And in case where we were not expecting to have it, so in that case we find it. So we suspect that when we increase the size, I have some difficulty to figure out what kind of catastrophe could go in. And so I say, let us consider that it was a sufficient proof, because and I have another thing. When I discuss this problem of symmetry breaking, I say that. I might say that the problem of symmetry breaking and the problem of stability of the spectrum and of the symmetries of the low of this number of low-lying levels with n is a more strong argument in favor of the symmetry breaking than this thing, because this thing goes, it is the leading behavior is like 1 over square root of n. If you go back to the problem of the slope and the problem of the energetic of the Pisa tower that I've been describing, in fact reported to one spin, it is a scaling log which goes like 1 over the square of n. So you gain 4 power of n. So it's quite understandable that it is more easy to look at the symmetry breaking on the spectrum directly than on this order parameter. I might finally do a last comment. We have computed the order parameter in the case of the triangular lattice in each of these levels. And it is the same in each of these levels. This level with S equals 0, total spin 0, total spin 1. You have the same order parameters, the same correlation function. I'm not the picture here, but... So I think that really it makes sense to say that this found qualitatively any approximation like non-linear quantum sigma model, because when you take the sigma model, you have to you first of all decide that you have this semi-classical, the coherent state. To say that is already to put in the theory as the problem of the semi-classical state. And so I think that this diagonalization says that gives that kind of information. So I will not comment. We have now point here, this critical point. I don't know how to scale the result, and if somebody here has some idea. No? Perhaps a quarter of an hour on Kagome? I'm sorry.
One more question on the triangular. You said yes. that without J2 you would have the three sublattices male, and with J2 of 0.7 you have the four sublattices. Have you varied J2 and gone through the transition between those two?
For this kind of coupling, no. We do not have varied because it was not expected that if there was a window for a disordered system, it was expected to be very small, and we have not done it. Because any, we have not done it. It was my feeling that it was perhaps not the best thing to do, because each of these computations are a lot of work, and so it's an open question.
In other cases, people do find a window of this order.
Yes, they find a window. In Schwinger boson, they find a small window. In spin waves also. But it's a small window. And in fact, I wanted also to, but we might have to do it. We have not.
Excuse me, maybe we should say that those who want to live.
Yes, sure. Sure.
Then those who want to hear about the Kagome
can. Sure.
Or the other possibility is to have a separate talk sometime on the Kagome, since
what do you suggest about? No, you don't.
It's up to you.
I'm certainly interested in hearing the one version.
Yeah. I'm certainly interested in hearing it.
Make another session.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So? It's up to you when you want.
Yes, do it. Next week, I'll ask
you. Oh, yeah. Tomorrow?
That's a possibility. Tomorrow? Okay. Should I check with Deborah if there's room tomorrow at lunch? Would that be
it seems to me that's a very accurate way of determining susceptibility. It seems to be one of the best. Except, I guess you're going to be MRG. If you only want the lowest energy state or given spin, you could get it for much larger systems with DMRG.
DMRG is larger system. Yes, DMRG is for larger system. I have recent result. Big people, very slimming a postdoc is actually looking at the problem of a quantum critical point. If we could look see it, and I have result we used this spin susceptibility to try to figure out where is the quantum critical point. But I have some difficulties to. I suspect that the guy should diverge at the quantum critical point. And it was a bit bizarre for me, because I think I understand what is going on. Yes, we'll go.
Let's talk about it afterwards.
Yes, there will be a lot of time to do it.
I have two comments to make that we can do. One is, if you have long range things, if instead of nearest and next nearest neighbors you had your four sublattices, but everybody in one sublattice interacts with everybody in the other sublattice, for instance, you can do
field pieces.
All the spin waves collapse to zero. All you have is your
But it's there. It survives.
I think that this square term should survive in many conditions, yes. Because it's a problem. It's related to.
It's very true. It's wonderful that you pointed it out. It's absolutely correct.
I think it's really a problem of collective.
But what you're showing, in fact, is not right now.
to move